Pricing is probably one of the most underrated yet most important factors of your SaaS business model that also heavily affects most product-related decisions. Doris Sasson is the co-founder of Stig, a platform which allows quick creation, implementation, and change of plans, pricing plans for SaaS. Today, we will speak about things like grandfathering, freemium versus trials, how to price yourself differently at different stages of your company, et cetera, et cetera. They've analyzed over 250 SaaS pricing pages, and I'm really keen on the results of that.
Welcome back to the Product Stories Podcast, hosted by Victor Peralnik. This podcast helps founders like yourself to find leaner ways to build successful SaaS products.
Dort, welcome to the show.
Hey, Victor. How's it going? Happy to be here. Thank you for hosting me.
Yeah, 100%. Good. Very good. How did you end up in SaaS pricing specifically? I know you've worked at some very cool companies, but how did you pick that niche?
So, Victor, honestly, my way with SaaS and specifically with pricing started as a product person. I used to build products for different SaaS companies where my main focus was around the AI ML domain. And actually, I got into pricing somewhat accidentally throughout my last year with New Relic, which builds amazing products for developers everywhere. I got an email that said entitlements with a spreadsheet attached to it. And it basically required me as a product manager that owns the AI ML product line to have all my features, the features that I was responsible for, to be correspondent in the way we go to market with them and fit our entitlement logic in the way we basically sell this product. Now, I don't know if all of our listeners are aware to the concept of entitlements, but the you know, in a nutshell, it's a configuration thing that defines what features are eligible to be sold and in what way and to what extent. And that was my first kind of interaction with SaaS world and how pricing comes to, you know, to be part of it. And I began to be very curious with how can we be faster as product leaders, as product managers in the way we think about the new software we ship and the new things of, you know, customer value that we build, and how can we be a lot more efficient in the way we package and introduce new values to our customers. And so that was basically the first kind of interaction or iteration for me with pricing, which ended up to be something a lot bigger. New Relic did a huge pricing overhaul that year, you know, doubling down on usage-based pricing, freemium model. And it was that moment that Anton, who later became, you know, co-founder, CTO of Stig together with me, we both realized that maybe there's something bigger here than New Relic. Maybe the, you know, very fundamental way that builders and founders everywhere think about pricing is still rigorous. It's still rigid. It's still, you know, outdated. And maybe there's a lot of room for innovation in the way you introduce and build pricing in SaaS.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I guess, especially at the beginning, people don't give it too much thought. Obviously, New Relic, huge company, with a lot of decisions being made on pricing. And as you said, you know, every single feature, how does that affect our pricing? How is it priced? What can we sell where, which package? That really gets complex. But probably most of our listeners don't run companies as big as New Relic, I guess, at least. but I think it's still relevant for people who launch and that scales, like pre-product market fit and past product market fit. How do these two stages differ in your opinion?
So I think that's a very good point to kind of try to be more granular and kind of like try to create this interesting, you know, kind of line between the different, you know, company. We like to call them like stages, you know, where the company is at and what is the company's goal. And I think if you kind of have like this imaginary image of, you know, a chart where you have like the timeline X and Y, where X is time and Y is like the growth of the company. So you can almost envision like the company's, you know, progress as the company grows, how pricing is intertwined with each and different step, and how the company has different needs and different considerations when you go to market and you think about pricing. So at the early stage, founders and builders typically are searching for product market fit. And so the number one thing that founders and builders are always thinking about is to find those desperate users, desperate customers that are really, you know, dire to use the product, to really want to be those early adopters of this thing that is going to help them remediate and solve those problems that they are solving. And so typically founders and builders at the early stage, pre-product market fit or right after product market fit, are not necessarily too much concerned with monetization and pricing, because the number one thing they care about is entering the market, creating adoption, and, you know, driving, you know, raving fans that like what you're building and are happy to use it, right? By the way, this a little bit changes now with the new market dynamics. So more and more early stage companies now do actually care about monetization and pricing and revenue stream and et cetera, but I leave it aside now. And so for those early stage companies, typically what they care about when they think about pricing is literally answering the very basic question, which is, hey, how do we price this thing? Like, what customers perceive as valuable? What are they willing to pay for? Like, willingness to pay is a research question that is almost parallel or orthogonal to, you know, finding product market fit. Because as you start to search for adoption and driving value and adoption for your product, you also want to start figuring out, well, how much would you be willing to pay for this thing? And what is this thing that you're willing to pay for? And so finding your unit of economy or value metric of your product becomes a very important task for the early days of every SaaS company, basically. Where at the later stages, things look a little bit different on the pricing side. So you would see other urging matters related to monetization and pricing, such as optimization, figuring out a more perfect setup, finding new ways and new buying experiences that customers like, entering new market segments, allowing more options for customers to enjoy and benefit of your software comparing to what you were offering so far. And then as the company scale more and more, you would see more and more, let's call them late stage concerns. For instance, M&As, right? Like, we just acquired this new amazing product and company. How do we introduce it as part of our pricing and offering? Or supporting multiple products, entering new market and geolocations and regions. And even at some point, typically you would see a complete pricing overhaul, changing the entire pricing model. So these things will typically unfold on the later stages more so than they are on the early stages.
That makes a lot of sense. And I suppose even at the early stage, you do want to have sort of that flexibility. You don't want to be stuck with whatever, you know, you come up with at a back of the napkin calculation over a beer with your co-founder in your early days, right? Like, that's right, the last thing you want to stick with for the next 10 years. So if we look at these various things, and especially pricing being a thing that should change, right? I think this is the key of the message across the entire life cycle of the company, that this is a variable, this is not a fixed thing. Yet I presume it's really not easy to test these things. So my question is, how do I actually run successful A/B tests with pricing? And especially, you know, in both, I can always make them more expensive. That won't annoy my current customer base. But especially if I just want to try giving, you know, 50% off, and not as part of a promotion, but as part of, you know, what if I'm too expensive? But I don't want to change everything today. I just want to test it out. I just want to try. How do I do that without annoying my customers? I think this is really a burning question I have.
So let's try to unfold. So when we think about pricing, and again, you know, this is definitely something that I'm being, you know, opinionated more than anyone. So take my advice with a grain of salt, Victor. So I would tell you this. So we like to differentiate between two concepts. One is experiments, or A/B tests, if you will. And the other is iteration or rollout, which is, if you think about product development lifecycle, it's basically this simple concepts to feature flagging versus experiments and A/B testing in the UX or product development world, where One is there to help you gradually introduce changes to your customers without annoying them, as you mentioned it. And the other is there to help you optimize and test certain hypotheses you have on how your customers would like to use your product. So similarly to the product development world, where you have some level of uncertainty with things that you've built that you want to tease out and test, same thing, same rules and same psychological behaviors apply here, only that with pricing, you also want to be a little bit more safe and protected on the edges in the way you introduce changes, because obviously when you change something that relates to budget and, you know, our pocket and our wallet, you know, these are things that you want to be a little bit more minded into the way you introduce them. So I can share a little bit from use cases from customers that we work with and some other, you know, interviews that we ran in the past. The gist of it will be as follow. We've seen we're starting to see a pattern of different A/B tests or experiments, if you will, that the most, let's call them, fastest growing organizations out there are typically more, you know, more common or more likely to do. So one experiment would be all about testing hypotheses that related to the customer journey. What I mean by that is, for instance, should the customer start with a free trial or with freemium, or maybe even reverse trial? And each of those setups and concepts might result in different outcomes. So your ability to tease out and see whether freemium or free trials or reverse trials even result in better outcomes is something that is very important these days, especially as product-led growth and self-service becoming more and more common as an experience in onboarding to new SaaS products. Now, the tricky part is that you want to be very precise on what are you measuring. How do you know that this test was successful? Is it merely the fact that you have more paying customers that you had, you know, between the different variants of the test that you've tried? Is it that you're getting more customers upgrading later downstream? Is it less churn? Ultimately, that is the variable that you want to test. So the one thing that I always tell Stix customers and anyone that I'm chatting with about pricing is before you run a test or an iteration, if you will, you really want to be precise on what are you measuring and understand when will you be able to measure it. The most basic example that I can give, let's think about testing free trials versus freemium, right? For you to know if this was a successful test or not, it's not enough to see how many of those new visitors became paying customers. You also want to see down the road which one of them churned or not and which one of them upgraded their plan or not. And ultimately, in terms of net dollar retention, what was better, right? Because it very much depends to what the company wants to optimize at each stage of the way. So going back to my previous answer, where the company is at when it comes to its life cycle and its stages, it's the thing that should dictate what is the thing that we are optimizing for and how do we want to optimize it. If I'm an early stage founder and I want to make sure that I'm on product market fit and I have enough of a market share, I'm probably optimizing for adoption at this point. So the thing that you want to tease out and test is what is the pricing setup that gets you the most adoption? It's not necessarily the same thing I would want to optimize, you know, one quarter or two quarter from now. And this is, you know, exactly the reason why we insist that you want to be nimble in your pricing setup and you want to be able to try different things as soon as you can. I don't know if that's exactly answered the question, but I think these are a few key concepts that we like to think about out loud as we think about pricing, iteration, and experiments. When it comes to not unknowing your customer base, so this is typically where marketing stakeholders would be more involved, as well as customer success or customer service, where these organizations within your org would very much care about the results because they want to make sure that the new pricing changes would not scare away existing customer base or hurt some previously set expectations. And so what we've learned working with some of these organizations is sometimes you would run those pricing experiments only on new visitors versus existing customers. So existing customers will remain with what they've, you know, already we're familiar with, as new visitors might experience some new buying option that wasn't there before.
That makes a lot of sense. Thank you for that answer. I think this is exactly, like, this is really fascinating to see. And also, I see that you're bringing this knowledge from bigger company where these experiments are much more formalized. And this is really, really good to see. And what I think is interesting at this point is, you mentioned that, I need to be able to track, right? And not just whether I, right in this one session, if a pricing change leads to a bigger click-through rate or even sign up to the trials, but also long-term, how does that really affect the entire life cycle of the average user, let's say? Are there any tools out there that really allow me to track this very well in combination with maybe a payment provider, or is that usually a custom coded setup to do this entire sort of cohort analysis?
So I'll be candid. These days, there are plenty analytical tools and BI tools out there, and they only get better. I know our listeners don't see it, but I am literally wearing a data nerd t-shirt right now. So I used to be big on data throughout my former product life. And so the one thing I can say is, and I'll separate the answer into two. So the first thing is, typically with early stage companies, they don't have enough volume of data to make sense when it comes to like the statistical significance of the results. And so what they're looking after at this stage is merely the ability to run changes with no code and without distracting the developers' focus and core value building their own product. And so there, what you want is merely the powerful ability to drive changes easily and with as less much time as you can, requiring developer attention to support those changes. Obviously, when you drive those changes, you want to be able to track them, which, going back to your question. Now, typically when we think about tracking those results, we think in SaaS about product analytics, like tools like Mixpanel, Amplitude, HIP. And I'm sorry if I'm not mentioning any vendors out there. There's really amazing vendors out there doing exactly that. But these tools are typically oriented and are, very much, kind of focused on product adoption and, A/B testing in the sense of, introducing new features and, usage patterns from adoption standpoint, where when you think about pricing changes and, structure-wise and pricing-wise and et cetera, this will typically require more work on the data engineers or data analysts, product analysts, and et cetera, to allow easy visualization and easy ways to see in real time or near real time the results of those changes. Because typically, you would have to converge and join signals that are coming from many different sources, from the website, from, billing solutions, CRM, login forms, the actual product. And so this typically becomes a little bit more tricky to create those one glance dashboards that you can understand how those changes may affect. I'm really trying not to make any like self-promotion conversation here, but I'll say this, like with Stig, I think, and I'm being as objective as I can, one of the nice thing is that we give you all of that out of the box, right? So we Anton and I experienced this pain firsthand. And so literally we made it super clear right at the start that we not only want to give you the ability to drive those changes, we also want to help you see them in a single glance. So we build a couple of elements inside our product that are, made exactly to create this kind of ability to see in a single glance what effects have they made all across. I can speak for other tools out there that solve some of these components from the financial side, maybe. Patrick Campbell, ProfitWell used to do a lot of great things on this front, still doing a lot of great things on this front, and some other great startups out there that are trying to solve, let's call it like the observability piece. But I think something that is not so straightforward and I think will become like a necessity, like something that you have to have in SaaS, is the ability to see very simple you know, one glance area that you can see all the relevant signals of, you know, how certain changes took effect, where the product experience is the first on the line. Like, ultimately, we like to say pricing is now part of the product experience. Now, pricing is not a financial or billing problem anymore. It's a product problem.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense, because it defines who it's for. It defines what you're buying, what you can afford with it, all of that, right? So, I mean, that also leads to, you know, do we do or can we do product-led growth, or do we have to do sales-led growth? I mean, all of that also is that is combined with pricing, right? Who's my target audience? I guess that is really the most important question here, that and what am I selling for whom, which then trickles down into pricing. What can I even do, right?
Yeah, I think I 100% agree with you. Even think about, right, like we're using Riverside, right? So think mm-hmm. about Riverside, right? Like the way they've built their pricing is sometimes what would make you incline more to using them versus any other, you know, solution out there is sometimes, you know, a good reason to consider, right? So whether they charge per seat or per call duration, what their free or growth plan allows, do you need to speak to anyone before you use it or not? Like all those components are things that you as a customer, you care about. I mean, this is part of your experience. This is the way you experience the product. And I think, by the way, I know we're talking a lot about SaaS, but let me be like this, you know, like this, you know, pricing nerd for just a second. And I'll say, you know,
oh, sure.
Look, even what is happening right now with cars, you know, Tesla and others, and, you know, even like the cheap industry, everybody are like, oh, maybe subscription is now interesting. Maybe we can sell another way. So I think what's driving a lot of this conversation is obviously the economy, you know, buying power of different currencies, market share. A lot of these things obviously are coming from a much broader resonance, but ultimately they trickle down to experience. We want as customers, as buyers, to experience in different ways. Sometimes it even have a fashion angle into it. Like, for instance, you talked about audiences. Developers, for instance, would be more inclined to buy self-service, whether, you know, other, you know, personas might want to buy speaking to somebody. So all those different things ultimately trickles down to experience.
Hiring a perfect team isn't a piece of cake, is it? To find a good candidate, you need to post a job on multiple job boards, review like 100 CVs, conduct at least a dozen initial interviews to make sure there's at least a single specialist you would like to hire. But with Superb Hire by Trustshoring, you can forget about all of the hiring headache. Find, meet, and hire skilled and dedicated assistants ready to take over marketing, sales, administrative, customer support, data entry, or other tasks, contribute to your business growth, and help you reach your goals. Superb Hire takes care of the entire recruitment process. You just have to show up for the final interview. Visit superbhire.com and book a free, no-commitment call to learn more. It's superbhire.com.
You mentioned, you know, Tesla, that the sharing economy, everything, right? Which is, you know, what am I getting? Do I need to go to a hotel, right? Or will I rent an Airbnb? And a fun thing I just recently read, I think yesterday, I didn't even know that it was a thing. Probably I'm not using Airbnb enough. I used to more back in the days, but apparently hosts can have these lists of chores that somebody has to do once they check out, right? That sometimes you have to do the laundry, take out the trash, I've heard people have to mow the lawn, something like that. And a lot of people were really angry about that. But the fun fact is, right, if you think back of what Airbnb was supposed to be, it was never supposed to be a hotel, which, you know, a lot of people now think it is, right? I go there and I expect everything done for me, just that it's not a hotel, it's an apartment, usually, right? But in the end, this is part of the sharing economy, where you do something together, you share your item and expect the person you're sharing it with to take care of it as well and not be that much of a service. And so this is interesting that people complaining about that somewhere in that expectation, right, which which depends on pricing. So the reason was Airbnb was charging a cleaning fee, right? Pricing fee. And yet people had to, you know, take out the trash. So this is where sort of expectations collide. And so this is also interesting just to take a look at the broader picture here, right?
So I'll even piggyback on that, Victor. I'll say the number one thing that, you know, once you dive into the pricing realm and, you know, you cannot unsee those things anymore. Like, it's almost like this new goggles that you wear that give you like x-ray vision that you can see all new, you know, motivations and reasons behind, you know, those pricing tweaks and the way they influence our value perception as buyers. So ultimately, I think value perception is, you know, and willingness to pay is something that every company, especially software companies, should really be thoughtful about. Like, how do you shape value perception and how pricing and ability to be nimble about it can come in handy in, you know, shaping value perception and helping unlock new and more buying options for your existing and new customers.
So what else can we talk about when it comes to pricing? And I know, especially in SaaS pricing, to come back to SaaS a little bit, you know, grandfathering is a big topic. How quickly should I implement pricing changes for my existing customer base? Or how should I offer custom plans or discounts for enterprise companies? We've already spoken about freemium versus free trial. What are your insights from, you know, looking at the companies you work with or other companies? You did mention when we spoke that you did it really a survey where you analyzed a lot of different pricing pages. What do you see drives these factors? What do people do?
So ultimately, companies really want to be minded and mindful to how their customers perceive those changes. You never want to end up hurting your brand reputation and creating the feeling like you've pulled the rug under your customers' feet. I like to give stories, and some of them are actually recent and public. So for instance, we can chat about what happened recently when Heroku decided to sunset their free plan, or when Babbel changed the way they charge for their existing customer base after they already built a bunch of applications on them. And so typically those things result in a painful reaction because customers don't like when unexpected changes happen and they take effect to their wallet, right? And especially if it's in a big magnitude. And so the number one thing is, as you know, if you're an early stage company, assume that you will do sooner than later a pricing overhaul. You will want to change your pricing. And so your ability to do that in a safe, protected, gradual way can actually be the thing that will prevent you from losing some or more of your customer base. Your ability to gradually introduce those changes can actually be that thing. And so being ready with the right infrastructure in place can mean the world when the moment comes in. When you're a late stage and maybe you already have some built in, you know, in-house built infrastructure that has its limitations, evidently you don't have the privilege of, you know, introducing it gradually, because if you were, you would. If you had it, you would. And so with that, you know, consideration in mind, you want to involve your key customers, the ones that represent your market, as early as you can with your plans, and be open about your plans. Some of these companies at these stages have like customer advisory board. They have regulars, you know, the field is talking to customers all the time. You want to start trickling down the fact that there's some change coming in, and this is how we think, or we're thinking about our new pricing that's coming ahead, and kind of like prepare. It's like, you know, preparing the public for a huge change that is coming. Like, you want to start getting those reactions safely and in, you know, with the ability to chat with the customer and understand their concerns. And so I can even speak out to what we had and what I'm hearing from. So I'll give an example that I'm hearing a lot actually from companies these days that consider to transition into usage-based, like pure pay-as-you-go model, where The number one concern is how their enterprise customers will react to it. And why? Because if you think about it, you know, those smaller segments that you're selling to, pay as you go makes absolute sense, right? Like, you know, my usage right now is fairly small. I'm just getting used to start, you know, using your product. And so if this thing is going to be a pay as you go thing, typically smaller segments such as startups and small companies, they are accepting it with, you know, they are well accepting and receptive to this change, where enterprise customers that are more heavy on the usage front and they are already using this product and maybe they don't even have another option, like migration away to another software is going to be a huge problem. So for them, this change to usage based sometimes is a no-go. Like, they won't be receptive to accept the fact that their bill is going to look differently now, especially if they have procurement or financial reasons to know, you know, they want to know in advance how much this thing is going to cost, you know, on a regular basis, because they don't like to be surprised by, you know, varying bills from one billing period to the other. And so typically what I would suggest, and it depends on the company stage, is to actually have your enterprise customers accept some sort of a bundle or a certain plan that they can live with for a certain, let's call it like in-between period, where they cannot get used to the fact that this thing is going to change gradually. And so you basically manually, gradually migrate them to the new pricing all the time. Obviously, again, it's a privilege that not all companies have. Maybe you have to do this pricing change immediately, even at the risk of losing some customer base. But typically, you don't want to touch existing customer agreements. You don't want to change those big enterprises' dynamics. And so whatever change you want to do that will affect them, you want to do it gradually and together with them, like as together as it can be, because you don't want to end up, you know, with, you know, your bigger segment churning for this reason.
That makes sense. And one thing that stood out for me here, and I really need to ask you this, is pay-per-use something hot that's coming up right now? Because obviously the entire promise of SaaS, of recurring revenue, is that recurring revenue is safe, is the hot deal, right? You have financial stability, this is what drives all the valuations. And yet obviously the other thing was that was a concern is growth, right? Is growth of the account. How can we make the account grow organically, right? So somebody is on a certain plan, I don't know, $100 per month. How can we upsell to them? And so the evolution of this is probably, how can we upsell by them needing more, but without actually having to put them on a different plan? So I assume this is where the evolution from pay-per-use came to recurring revenue and is now starting to look back at pay-per-use, which is very funny. Is that like the hot new thing that people are tinkering with to actually give up, you know, SaaS without recurring revenue?
So, Victor, I actually really glad that you, you know, kind of highlighted this topic, because we, you know, even here within Stig Realm, we have this conversation at least once a week, and I'll try to give my two cents and I'll be as thoughtful as I can with the answer. So, ultimately, something that I try to say to everyone I speak with about their pricing is to my opinion, there is no one size fits all. Sure. There's just no such thing. Like, you need to be very thoughtful and understand your customer base very well and the way they like and expect to buy new software, and have your GDM model and your pricing model in such way that is corresponding to their value perception and to the way they expect to buy software. Now, in addition to that, every pricing expert out there that you will speak with will tell you that when you think about your pricing, you gotta think about it from the lenses of acquisition, expansion, and, you know, retention. And so ultimately, like, there is a book that I read earlier. It's like, they say, like, it's been written by Mark Stiving. He call it like win, keep, grow. You want your pricing plans to be built in such a way that you consider how you acquire customers, how you retain customers, and how you grow customers. And so that doesn't necessarily mean pay as you go. There are, you know, usage based, there are SaaS ways to upgrade and up, you know, upsell and cross sell. There are a bunch of ways to have your customers continue to grow without necessarily having your pricing, you know, full fledged pay as you go, single unit, pay per unit, go, go, go. Like there's a bunch of ways. And so ultimately, what I would like to suggest is instead of having these typical conversations like pay as you go versus subscriptions, who will win and why, which will win and why, I would suggest to just have a conversation that says, hey, who are your customers? What is the thing they perceive as valuable? How do you allow them to continue to grow if they like your product? And then if the answer, you know, trickles down to pay as you go makes the most sense, great, do pay as you go. But it doesn't necessarily have to be just pay as you go. There's a bunch of ways to go about it. Good, better, best with upsells and add-ons and a bunch of others. Another thing you want to be thoughtful about, and I think also is coming up right now, is that the new market dynamics and the downturn also had some influence on how people think about their pricing. Because right before the downturn, everybody were keen and excited about pay-as-you-go because you wanted to show expansion path and you wanted to show how your product, you know, self-servely, natively, you know, sell itself and existing customer base continue to grow and use it. But now, immediately after the downturn hits, everybody just reduced usage. It's like immediately, like, just get out, right? Like, let's pay less, as much less as we can, right? So what happened was a lot of businesses that were pay-as-you-go now lost usage, meaning they are more sensitive now to their revenue stream is more sensitive to usage, and it's a double-edged sword for the benefit and for the what. So I don't want that from the way I describe it. It will sound like I'm not necessarily the advocate for pay-as-you-go. I'll just say, when you think about your pricing, you need to be, you know, mindful to all those dynamics. And, you know, funny enough, it still corresponds to my main, right? Like my main kind of catchphrase, which is you want to be able to make changes fast. So if you realize pay-as-you-go is not working for you, you probably want to be able to change real quick and, you know, without destructing your business and your operation and your focus, right? So it still makes the case that you want to be nimble.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And I do get that as the sort of most important factor around your decision infrastructure, which I think obviously leads us to Stig. Now, how do you guys help SaaS founders manage their pricing? What's in it when I use Stig?
So at the very basic level, we allow you to slice and dice your product, your offering into the most atomic units. And once you do that, you can basically package and reprice your product again and again and again, however you like. Basically, we challenge the concept of, you know, pricing has to be a single one-off, you know, investment that is very much tied to what you're billing or payment processor allows. And we try to come in with a new approach that says, let's give developers all the elements and components and tooling they need to, you know, build out pricing experiences really fast, and basically let non-developers, product team, growth teams, GDM teams to be able to tweak and iterate and optimize without ever distracting again, you know, developers. And so the way it works is stay integrate seamlessly with your application, whether it's like versus our VR SDKs or APIs. We have APIs and SDKs for all the relevant frameworks, backend and front end. And we also integrate seamlessly with billing providers such as Stripe and, you know, Chargebee, and CRM such as HubSpot and Salesforce coming right up, and as well as your data pipelines, right? Like where you like to do BI. And basically what we give you is a single control panel to manage your pricing, change the model, change the dollar value, change the plan structure, the limits, like feature limits, meters, introduce trials, change the trials length, duration, you know, basically you can do all of that without code. And most recently we built out, I'm excited because it's literally really most recently we are introducing now our A-B test, you know, experiment solution, which allows you to, I think for the first time in SaaS, experiment different, you know, experiences, different setups, and see what performs better over time. So I think this is, it really gets me excited because it's literally the tool that I would want to have as a builder, as a product person myself, to understand value and to see what's the best way to package and, you know, introduce, you know, value to you know, former customers. And so, yeah, so ultimately, we see Stig as the infrastructure, you know, the very, you know, bare metal infrastructure for, you know, building out pricing in SaaS.
Awesome. This is helpful. Where can people learn more, sign up, and where can people get in touch with you?
So they can, I'm pretty much a social person myself. So I'm either available on LinkedIn DMs. They're pretty much open, or we have I didn't mention it, Victor, but we actually created a really neat community that we like to call Pricing for Founders. It has, you know, pricing experts from all SaaS world, as well as founders and builders everywhere, that we try to create a lot of interesting engagement and, you know, Q&As and conversation around SaaS pricing. So you can easily join our community and kind of join in and, you know, either chat with me or anyone else. We are we like to see ourselves as like the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, that we like to jump on any call basically and give our advice based on what we've learned. We like to create content and, you know, helpful resources that can help you think about your pricing. We did the GDM Explorer. We recently introduced our Pricing Quest, which is another resource that you can use. So yeah, we're definitely all about, you know, being out there and help people think about their pricing, make better decisions, and ultimately be able to launch pricing faster, you know, save scarce developer time, and basically see more growth by giving customers more buying options. So yeah, we're definitely out there and happy to chat.
Nice. Amazing. Well, that was super interesting. Thank you so much for coming on, and have a great week.
Thank you, Victor. Thanks for having me. Really enjoyed the conversation.
This show is brought to you by Trust Shoring, your friendly concierge to find reliable and tested software developers from Eastern Europe. We recruit full-time developers, match you to an experienced software house that's ideal for your requirements, or recommend a reliable freelancer for smaller projects. But most importantly, you benefit from our experience of developing software remotely for almost 10 years. We give you one-on-one guidance all the way so you're never lost. Stop the tedious hiring or vetting process and get matched to reliable talent. Sign up for a free consulting call with one of our experts today. Go to trustshoring.com.